Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Romney wins in New Hampshire but faces a barrage of GOP attacks over his days at Bain Capital, tension up with Iran, and dismay at a YouTube video of U.S. Marines. Mitt Romney took the New Hampshire primary by a wide margin. He's 2-for-2 after the Granite State and Iowa.
Thank you, New Hampshire. Tonight, we made history.
But Romney's Republican rivals were slamming his business record at Bain Capital. Vulture capitalist was Rick Perry's phrase in South Carolina.
I happen to think that companies like Bain Capital could have come in and helped these companies if they truly were venture capitalists, but they're not. They're vulture capitalists.
And Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and many others expressed shock at a YouTube video of U.S. Marines urinating on the corpses of Taliban fighters in Afghanistan.
Anyone found to have participated or known about it, having engaged in such conduct, must be held fully accountable.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Brian Monroe of CNNPolitics.com, David Korn of Mother Jones, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation. Is it Romney's to lose? What about the vulture capitalist charge? And what are you thinking on the Marines and that video? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us this week from Washington is Brian Monroe, editor of CNNPolitics.com. Brian Monroe, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me again.
Also with us from Washington, David Korn, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones. David Korn, welcome back to you as well.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, where it's all over but the reporters' bar bills, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Brian, and David.
I'm going to go straight to this inside the GOP tent. Great fight this week, blow up over Romney's business record. It is the thing that he's put right out front. We'll look at the results of New Hampshire. We'll go to South Carolina. But here you are, the thing that Mitt Romney takes most pride in, that he puts front and center as his qualification for leading this nation back to economic health anyway. And it is under attack for much of this week by Newt Gingrich. We heard it there by Rick Perry. Here was Newt Gingrich said it was looting what Romney had done. Here he was talking with Sean Hannity on Monday, ripping into Mitt Romney's record at Bain Capital.
There's a company in the Wall Street Journal today that Bain put $30 million into, took $180 million out of, and the company went bankrupt. Now you have to ask yourself, you know, was a 6-to-1 return really necessary? What if they'd only taken $120 million out? Would the company still be there? Would 1,700 families still have a job? I think there's a real difference between people who build in a free market and people who go around, take financial advantage, loot companies, leave behind broken families, broken towns, people in unemployment.
Broken families, broken towns, loot companies. He's backpedaling a little bit in his rhetoric later this week, but his big 27-28 minute film is still out there going at Bain Capital. Rick Perry can't get off the vulture theme. Here he is.
They're just vultures. They're vultures that are sitting out there on the tree limb waiting for the company to get sick. And then they swoop in. They eat the carcass, they leave with that, and they leave the skeleton.
Yeah, it's pretty bloody out there in that. At a Fort Mill, South Carolina town hall meeting this week, just going after, ripping into Mitt Romney. Rush Limbaugh hated all this, said, look, come on, this is not what Republicans are all about. Here he is going after Republicans, criticizing this attack on Romney.
All this talk about sucking the blood out of companies and leaving corpses? Limiting how much somebody can make in profits? This is the language of leftists. Like Michael Stone and Michael Moore and Oliver Stone. They popularized this. This is the way Fidel Castro thinks.
Michael Stone, Oliver Moore, Fidel Castro, Brian Monroe. What have we witnessed this week inside the GOP when it comes to Mitt Romney's point of pride?
Well, it's fascinating to watch how the GOP has both come together against Gingrich and Perry's attack on Romney, but at the same time have short-term memory. I don't know if our listeners remember that John McCain, Senator John McCain, at the time when he was running against Mitt Romney in 2008, said almost the exact same thing. And now, of course, John McCain is in the Romney camp. So this is certainly a divisive issue amongst the Republicans. And as importantly, it's something that the Democrats thought they could keep in their pocket and drop when the general election happens. And now maybe this actually helps Romney to get it out the way now.
David Corn, is this all over? Is the Republican pressure to drop this line of attack so great that it's going to go away? I mean, the ads are still running through South Carolina. That's another week or 10 days. But once that's behind us, is this done, gone?
Well, you know, Tom, I hope not, because I really like hearing Newt sounding like Bruce Springsteen. Broken homes, broken families, yeah, yeah. What happened to America? Or like William Jennings Bryan, as he did when I watched him up in New Hampshire a couple of days ago. It does seem that this onslaught of counter-offensive attacks from Rush Limbaugh, others in the Republicans, including hypocrites like John McCain and Mike Huckabee, who last time around were making the exact same arguments against their competitor Mitt Romney, is forcing Newt to attenuate his attack, showing you how heartfelt it really is. And Rick Perry, too, has not mentioned vultures now, I think, in a day and a half. So so it seems as if at least the candidates themselves are going to pull back. But as you know, there are these super PACs out there. And as you know, in South Carolina, there is the biggest whisper campaign mechanism and apparatus there, where you go and you hire a firm, they do push polling, and they say all sorts of things that could be even worse than the super PAC ads you're seeing about Bain or anything else.
Because it's on the telephone to voter by voter, they're pushing those messages.
So these messages still could be utilized. But I think you're going to see Newt and Rick Perry and others not maybe do it themselves. I mean, you can imagine the conversation that some people might be trying to have with Newt Gingrich. Nice little consulting business you have here in Washington. Made $2.6 million last year, didn't you? Be a pity if anything should happen to that after the campaign. So he, Rick Santorum, and others still have a career to look forward to, as does Rick Perry to some degree in Texas, when this is all said and done. So that may apply some restraint to their newfound love of populist economics.
Jack, I want to come to you on populist economics, but Mitt Romney stood right up against it, making the sort of classic Republican case that this is not what he should expect from his party compatriots. Here he is on Wednesday on the Today Show.
I think it's something we expected to come from President Obama, but we didn't expect that Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry would become the witnesses for his prosecution, if you will, and I don't think it's helped them. And for them to be attacking free enterprise and to suggest that people should have a limit to how much they can make in their success is something which the Democrats have talked about for years.
And GOP John Huntsman on MSNBC's Morning Joe Tuesday said, unlike Gingrich, he wasn't going to go after Mitt Romney's record at Bain Capital. Here's Huntsman.
I'm not going to quibble with Bain Capital because he can quibble with my record in manufacturing in business, but I will quibble with what he did as governor because I think that's more germane and relevant. How did he govern his state from an economic development standpoint when he had 4 years? I think it is a whole lot more germane to the voters what he did when he was an elected official.
Jack Beatty, what do you make of this week's fight inside the Republican Party about tough capitalism?
First, Tom, a correction. I supplied you with incorrect information in our Tuesday show from Manchester. John Gregg, the respected political reporter for Western New Hampshire's Valley News, is not the nephew of former New Hampshire Senator John Gregg. My apologies to John, to you, to our listeners.
Duly noted.
Yes. Well, you know, what struck me was that what Mr. Romney told Matt Lauer this week, he said envy is what motivates outrages over capitalist excesses like, you know, Bain-engineered layoffs. What about empathy? We don't really envy the financial predator. We fear him. To quote the ad playing in the Newt's ad playing in South Carolina, we fear the day that a Mitt Romney might come to our town to wring profit from our pain. Two-thirds of Americans now believe there are very strong or strong conflicts between rich and poor. Fewer than half in a recent poll trust business to do what's right. You know, in the face of sentiments like that, Mr. Romney, I think, really needs to give a speech addressing the problem framed by John Maynard Keynes. Quote, to convert the businessman into a profiteer is to strike a blow at capitalism.
A profiteer. We're going to be hearing, surely, some form of this debate in the year ahead once President Obama is also in the ring working for his reelection. Let's get our listeners. Burlington, Vermont. Robert, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Robert.
Hi. I never thought that I would be agreeing with Rick W. Perry about anything, but about the vulture capitalism, I sure do. Romney, just after that, he said, I want to be the president of the job creators and the risk takers. And my question for Mitt Romney is, what about the rest of us schlubs? If you're a venture capitalist, you have to have capital. If you have capital, you have wealth, and if you have wealth, you're not worrying about health care for your family.
Hey, but Robert, doesn't a successful market economy require risk-taking? Isn't that part of the package?
Well, it's successful for the venture capitalists, but what they're selling us is the trickle-down thing, that when these venture capitalists do well, then us regular schlubs do well. But I think that experiment has been tried since 1981.
Robert, I appreciate your call. Brian Monroe, what do you think in the general election, where do Americans come down on this? I mean, they've been behind market capitalism for a long, long time here, but it can get pretty stripped down and mean sometimes.
Well, you know, there are two sides. You absolutely do need the capital to get the businesses going, but you also need the workers. You need the employees that give you the strength and also fuel the economy. But, you know, the bigger picture is that some of these attacks actually may start to be landing. What we're seeing right now in South Carolina is definitely going to be a slugfest. Gingrich is spending and will be spending a ton of money. And we can talk more about, you know, what $3 million is going to do in the South Carolina media market.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Romney on a roll, a vulture capitalism charge, assassination in Tehran. We'll look at that. And U.S. Marines in trouble. Boy, sickening video there. With us this hour, David Korn of Mother Jones, Brian Monroe, editor at CNNpolitics.com. Jack Beatty's here. Brian Monroe talks about ads in South Carolina. Here's one from Winning Our Future, big super PAC supporting Newt Gingrich, airing this ad slamming again Mitt Romney's record at Bain Capital.
A group of corporate raiders led by Mitt Romney. The company was Bain Capital, more ruthless than Wall Street.
Pulled the rug out from under our plant.
Everybody was fired.
Pulled the rug out from under our plant. We've got callers on this. Mark in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
There's an important distinction between venture capital and private equity that's being confused here.
Yes, particularly by Rick Perry, who says it's not venture capital, it's vulture capital. He's all off in the VC land, but that's not where Mitt Romney was.
No, exactly. Now, it's easy because of the wordplay there to substitute vulture for venture. But, you know, venture capitalists only make money when they build companies. You know, we lose money right alongside everybody. I'm a venture capitalist, obviously, if things don't work out. So we're building companies, we're creating jobs. It's the only way venture capitalists make money.
Mark, duly noted, and I'm glad you make that point. And private equity comes in, invests, and sees what they can do with that investment.
Yeah,
what?
Well, private equity, another form, you know, leveraged buyouts or a form of private equity where you're doing some kind of financial engineering. Now, there's some good private equity that really makes companies more healthy and benefits from that progress, but there's also private equity that's really pure financial engineering, and that can lead to some of the unfortunate consequences that you're talking about. But
you're kind of in a cousin biz then, not the same. Venture capital and private equity different. We take that. But what do you make of Mitt Romney's record? You're a Massachusetts guy. You're kind of in the biz, different wing of it. Do you think he's a privateer or not, or both?
I think it's you know, morally complex and nuanced. And look, I'm an Obama supporter, so I'm happy to hear him, his own party piling on. I think it's a little bit, opportunistic or purely political to sort of try to paint all the private equity guys as, you know, vulture capitalists. I think like every other business, there's, you know, some good things that happen and some bad things that happen. Romney in particular, I would have to, you know, if you really wanted to know whether he, you know, is a good guy or a bad guy or neither, you know, you'd take a look at his portfolio companies. You could do the math and see if he's a net job creator. I don't think private equity is necessarily some kind of evil business more than any other business.
Moral complexity certainly there, though, and that is a tough thing to handle in a presidential campaign. Mark, I'm very glad for your call on that distinction. Anne-Marie in Scituate, Rhode Island. Anne-Marie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, I would just like to mention that Bain Capital successes. Now, they've been talking about Staples and Sports Authority and Domino's Pizza. And I just wonder, what kind of wages are in these retail businesses? Most of the retail businesses pay nothing more than minimum wage or maybe a couple of bucks more. They're certainly not living wage jobs. So is this all he can say he created is minimum wage jobs?
Well, I'm sorry we don't have Mitt Romney here to answer that himself, because I have no doubt it would be a complex answer. But you're right, Anne-Marie, that at the top of the list that people talk about are companies that have become very big. Staples, Sports Authority, Domino Pizza, absolutely. David Korn, you know, you hear Anne-Marie's question, okay, fine, he did great, he's rich. But what about the workers and the businesses that he did have success with?
I mean, let's cut to the chase here, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
When Mitt Romney was running Bain Capital, it wasn't his mission in life to make things better for workers. He created, you know, businesses that may have created some jobs. There's been a whole, you know, his campaign 2 weeks ago claimed that he created 100,000 jobs. And then it turned out that they pulled that number just out of there, you know what. And they can't back it up because a lot of companies lost. And there's a great story in the LA Times today about how one steel company that they made money off of ended up, you know, surviving for some period of time only because of government subsidies and government guarantees that Bain wanted. I think this was in Indiana, but I may have the state wrong. So it was about gaming the system, finding opportunities to make money for his investors. Nothing else. Now, some of his investors were pension funds, so maybe retired teachers benefited from this, right? So you can give him that. But there is a difference between private equity and venture capital. You know, when he starts comparing Mitt Romney, what he did to President Obama saving the auto industry, it's ludicrous. President Obama went out to save the auto industry, to save jobs and keep the economy bolstered and not lose 1 million jobs that would ripple across the country, hurting places as far as Massachusetts and New Hampshire. That wasn't Mitt Romney's motivation. He was there to make money. So when he gets out there and tries to portray himself as a job creator, it, you know, if it happened, it was incidental.
Well, but that's, I mean, here comes Rush and others who say, hey, you know what? That profit-seeking is the way it's supposed to work, and it made the country great. Jack, how do you think this is going to play out in the year ahead when the president gets in the ring with this contender?
Well, we already have a preview. Stephanie Cutter, an aide at the White House, has put out a statement contrasting what President Obama did after Harvard Law School and what Mitt Romney did after his dual degree at Harvard Law School and the Harvard Business School. President Obama, Barack Obama, went to work for helping organize people in Chicago who had lost their jobs because of the closing. Steel mills had been closed down, and Mr. Romney went into eventually private equity. Essentially, well, in the case that that David was just mentioning, a Kansas City steel company, he went out of business partly because of Bain's intervention and the debt it was saddled with.
Let's go. I'm looking here at a response online. Here's a listener who says, Romney has a deep resume. Bain is an important part. It takes leadership to build a team and have success in business. He was also a successful governor during a time of economic crisis. He also led the Olympics turnaround. I would hire him in a minute to turn the country around or help to do that. Bill in Omaha, Nebraska. Bill, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just have a couple of points to make. First of all, I think it's important to recognize that many of the companies that private equity take over have created value over a number of decades. And what these private equity firms do is to literally suck that value out in a very short period of time. They do not create jobs. They do not create lasting value. And that's borne out by the fact that they take the same companies, public and private and public again, without any net improvement in the company. The second point that I think we ought to make is that when you look at where capitalism is now, what's happening is money is churning money. We're not creating new plants. We're not educating people. And what that means is going forward in the future, we're going to be that much further behind countries that are doing those things.
Well, certainly we've lost some ground in recent years. There's no question about that. I mean, Brian Monroe, You know, when you look at this and think about the debates we're going to see in the year ahead, if it's Mitt, if he, you know, does it in South Carolina and rolls on, then he comes up against the sort of 99%, 1% arguments here. Who's he building business for? Who's he making money for?
Well, you know, that's exactly how the Democrats are going to play this, and, you know, really looking at the 99 versus the 1%. But let me tell you why this matters. And I'm looking at right now, we're putting a piece up on CNN Politics that shows a poll that just came out from the American Research Group that shows that Romney and Gingrich are now neck and neck in South Carolina, 29% mm-hmm. wow. versus 25%.
No kidding.
And Ron Paul at 20%. Mm-hmm. These attacks are hitting. And you're going to see a lot more of them in the next few days because they are making people stop and think about, you know, is this a coronation for Mitt Romney or does he still have some work to do before he gets the nomination?
Could he still stumble?
That is indeed very possible. You know, he has played it fairly safe and has really run more of a national campaign than hitting local issues in South Carolina. But South Carolina is a very much of a battleground, particularly amongst the Republicans. And the Republicans have shown that they are willing to fight and fight dirty in South Carolina.
Jack Beatty, there is certainly a lot of money rolling around there. Super PAC money, big time.
It certainly is the case. It's a historic primary there. You know, you could call it the battle of the billionaires. Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, and John Huntsman all have billionaire sugar daddies fueling super PACs. Huntsman's doubles as his real daddy. And no doubt there's a Wall Street billionaire at the bottom of Mitt Romney's woodpiles in the super PAC. You know, South Carolina really offers a preview of a coming attraction in post-Citizens United America, a horror movie called Wealth Over Commonwealth.
Oh. Yeah, that's a stunning thing. In South Carolina, Gingrich, for instance, is going to spend $3 million on ads. That compare that to what is a good buy for any politician to buy off the state for a whole week. That's about $300,000. So 10 times more in the next 9 days.
You've got big money rolling. It's going to be really interesting to see what messages they continue to push as this internal Republican debate says, don't push that button. That's capitalism. Let's get a call from Ahmed in Montreal. Ahmed, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Tom. Basically, I'm going to talk about the Iranian issue. I think that there's a real, real double standard going on. Iran has signed a non-proliferation agreement, which gives it the right to build nuclear energy. However, the USA keeps on ratcheting up with the sanctions, the Strait of Hormuz. I don't know if it was them or the Israelis, as they're saying, with the bomb this week. And it looks like they're pushing towards another war. Israel, on the other hand, has nuclear weapons, and nobody says one word about them. I think it's a real double standard here.
But is it a problem for the region, for the world, for energy, you name it, if Iran pushes that nuclear program toward weapon production, which many suspect it is doing, Ahmed?
So far, I haven't seen the Iranians do anything to anybody. I have seen, on the other hand, the Americans doing to lots of other countries with the bombings and things. So Iran, I don't have a history of them doing anything. On the other side, I have the Americans and the Israelis have a history of doing something. That's my problem.
Ahmed, we've got it. Let us turn to this story. I mean, here we go again, David Corn. This is the fourth time that we've had, I think they've all been, the motorcycle pulls up behind the automobile of an Iranian nuclear scientist in traffic in Tehran, slaps a magnetic bomb to the car, at least that's the way it was this week, drives off, car blows up, and that 30-something nuclear scientist dead there, along with his bodyguard. In Tehran, very unhappy about this, accusing Israel and the United States of pulling this off. Emphatic denials from the Americans, but Israel kind of winking, yeah, maybe that's theirs. Tension's really up here, David Corn. Where does this go?
Well, that is the frightening question at the moment. Where does it go? We're talking about closing the Straits of Hormuz. The Obama administration, despite the Republican line that Obama is appeasing Iran, has been actually trying to tighten the noose this week, getting tighter sanctions, trying to get countries like Japan to stop purchasing oil from Iran.
And having some success.
They had success with the foreign minister of Japan, who said he was interested in going along. But then the prime minister, I think today or yesterday, whenever it happened, said he wasn't so sure and they'd have to take business considerations into consideration. So you know what that means. But it's a hard sell because Russia and China is not behind this. But I was struck this morning reading David Ignatius's column in the Washington Post. He's been a longtime watcher of foreign policy matters. Maybe he's been on your show. And the opening line was just kind of, you know, striking. I have it in front of me. He wrote, as the United States and Iran move closer toward open confrontation, it's important that both take quiet steps to avoid the miscalculations and misunderstandings that can lead to an inadvertent military conflict. And he then went on to refer to the Cuban Missile Crisis. And, you know, this is one thing where Obama was laughed at earlier during the campaign for saying he would sit down with the leaders of other countries. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure you're going to sit down and strike a deal with Ahmadinejad anytime soon, but we have to make sure that the signals that we send, and they have to make sure the signals that they send are accurate and that people know where everyone stands so that nothing inadvertent does happen in that very, you know, explosive part of the world. So, you know, tensions are going up, and that should worry everybody.
We were looking at the Strait of Hormuz situation last week. U.S. military assessing that Iran could indeed close it, and it's not clear whether it would take a couple days or months to open it up again. Here's some tape of the father of that nuclear scientist, Mostafa Ahmadi Roshan. This is Rahim, his father, telling Iran's press TV that, in his opinion, the bombing, the assassination there, was the work of the U.S. and Israel.
It's obvious who could be behind these assassinations, and there is no need for me to say it. If you ask small kids, they will tell you that this attack is linked to the U.S., Israel, and the global arrogance.
But here's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton very firmly denying that the U.S. played any role in the death of the Iranian scientist killed on Wednesday.
I want to categorically deny any United States involvement in any kind of act of violence inside Iran.
Jack, what do you make of that categorical, emphatic denial from Clinton of U.S. involvement?
Well, I accept it because, of course, it would be against the law for the president to do anything like that. In the reporting on this, I've been struck. The Times quoted, I think, an Israeli expert saying, look, this is better than war, isn't it? It's better to kill the scientists than bomb the sites they're building. On the other hand, Gary Sick, who for 30 years, I think, has been the gold standard of experts on Iran since he served on Carter's National Security Council, he said this about this matter. He said, it's important to turn around and ask how the U.S. would feel if our revenue was being cut off, our scientists being killed, and we were under cyber attack. Would we give in or would we double down? I think we'd fight back and Iran will too. This hard line may have unforeseeable consequences.
Iran saying today that it's willing to talk again. It wants serious talks again about its nuclear program. Of course, there have been talks going on for a long time. And then the next thing you know, it's more advanced. Brian Monroe, do you see the Obama administration in a position to get back into talks here? Or does there a certain kind of, you know, military inevitability start to grind in here at some point?
Well, I don't know if either one will happen. The showdown that's looming over the Straits of Hormuz is very real, and U.S. military officials have said they will not tolerate it. But even, you know, back on the political bent, you've got Rick Santorum out there saying that the attack on the Iranian scientist was a wonderful thing. That's kind of loose and reckless, and you know, that's really going to ratchet up looking at both sides of the aisle.
A wonderful thing. So, I mean, once again, we see, Jack, we are almost certain to have this tension, this debate over where things go with Iran right in the middle of a political campaign in this country. They've got politics going on there, too, an extra level of volatility right there, Jack.
Yes, and, we just can't blink the fact that domestic politics has had a baneful effect on our foreign policy when it comes to military matters. I mean, wherever you look, presidents can so easily be tempted to force things to a crisis in order to benefit, and candidates attacking presidents can add to that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, the fishing town of Cordova, Alaska, buried under more than 20 feet of snow made heavy by rain. Here's Deputy Harbormaster Glenn Anderson trying to keep boats from sinking.
Each shovel load, is, I don't know what it weighs, 30, 40, 50 pounds. It's like picking big, large stones out of a quarry.
A new book, Dishes on the First Lady. Michelle Obama told CBS's Gail King that she does not buy some of the portrayal, that it's not her.
That's been an image that people have tried to paint of me since, you know, the day Barack announced that I'm some angry black woman.
And Beyonce and Jay-Z have a new baby daughter, Blue Ivy Carter. Papa Jay-Z wrote a song, Glory, to mark the occasion.
The most amazing feeling I feel. Words can't describe, but the feeling for real. Baby, I paint the sky blue. My greatest creation was you.
Feeling for real. We're talking about a week in the news, Romney on a roll, the vulture capitalism business, assassination Tehran, and the U.S. Marine video. Brian Monroe is with us from CNNpolitics.com today. David Korn from Mother Jones is here, and our own Jack Beatty. Wow, that video out of Afghanistan. Here's BBC reporter Quentin Somerville. He talked to Afghans to get their reactions to the video showing U.S. Marines urinating on the corpses of Taliban fighters.
This man said, all Muslims condemn the action of foreign soldiers who urinated on the bodies of Taliban fighters. It's against Islam and the international community's mission. We want the Human Rights Commission to arrest these criminals. And another said, it will harm the peace talks. It seems that the U.S. never wants peace talks to happen in Afghanistan. This action will increase misery in the country.
And in this day and age, that video just goes round and round and round. That country, around the Muslim world, around the planet. Sarah in Omaha, Nebraska, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that, you know, it's deplorable any time a corpse is desecrated, and certainly on our part, you know, for our soldiers to do that, I think it's indicative of the stress they're under. We have such a high suicide rate in the military, you know, and I'm not making excuses for their behavior. I'm just saying that any time you have, you know, behavior like that, whether we've had cases where Marines were convicted of rape, like I think it was in Okinawa. Anytime somebody is doing something that's so contrary to their core mission, it's their stress that they're under is so great.
Yeah, I hear you, Sarah. I hear you absolutely. I mean, these guys are out and they're fighting and they're being fired on, but still the cost. I mean, to our honor, to everybody's dignity, to the war effort there, to the peace effort there. I'll look at this with our guest. I appreciate your call, Sarah. One more, Peter in Boston. You're on the air, Peter.
Yes, Tom. Great show. Listen, along those lines, I also am a combat Marine veteran, and there's no question these Marines have made some grave errors, but in kind of mitigation, these are scout snipers with 3rd Battalion, 2nd Marines. These are like the elite in the grunts, and there's no doubt that the anger that they have and that sometimes got carried away. And I just think in mitigation, you need to step back. The Marine Corps is definitely going to look into this, but I certainly think like the when you listen to the being pillars, that they need to be. Other than regular Marine Corps channels to go after them, I think we need to give them a break. And remember, these are the guys who are doing the fighting and killing for us over there.
Yeah, I take your point on that, Peter, but the price to everybody, I mean, to them, first of all, because they got to live with this forever, and it's sad they weren't in a system of discipline that kept them from that. They're not going to be proud looking back on that. I mean, tell me if you disagree, but I don't think so. And then the price to everything we're trying to accomplish here, Peter, the price, it never goes away on YouTube.
Well, let me say this. I think that there's, Achilles, when he killed Hector, pulled people around on his chariot. I think combat Marines who have been in a lot of killing have a lot of, I can tell you in Vietnam, things like that happened all the time. And wars happen like that all the time. And it, again, people who haven't done it, and again, I'm talking about the trigger pullers, who were the minority in the Marine Corps and everything else.
Yeah,
and those guys, they're going to live with it. But on the other hand, I think they obviously didn't think it through, and to be going viral and putting on the internet, I mean, those things should be looked into. I would like to see Secretary State Panetta and kind of concentrate. We're getting out of there of having more rockets and attacks for the drones to kill these armed insurgents from coming over, to lessen our casualties over there, because that's, we know we're getting out of there, and we should do the most we can to protect them.
Yeah, Peter, I appreciate your call. We have someone here, and I want to get to Brian and David and Jack, but one more, if I may. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Claude, you're on the air. Thank you for calling, Claude.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I also am a combat veteran, a retired sergeant major.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely no excuse for that. I understand the combat, but here's where the situation lies. The Non-Commissioned Officer Corps is supposed to teach values and tradition to our soldiers, and we haven't got the soldiers through the traditional schooling because the war has been drawn out so long. due to missions and funding, we have young people without the kind of experience or without the kind of training that can control those things. Those things happen. I'll agree they happen, but they can be controlled if you've got NCOs on the ground doing the right thing, but we don't. We've got all mostly young people now. We don't have them through the schools and trained to take care of that. And that, yeah. So that comes all the way back up to Congress, you know.
Yeah.
So those folks are at fault, and they create a hell of a problem for us, making more enemies for our country.
Sergeant Major Claude, you make the point clearly and well, and I really appreciate your sort of seasoned eye on that. Let me take it to my panel. There's a whole range of responses right there. Brian Monroe, let me come first to you. I mean, yes, combat stress, we hear it, but there's the Sergeant Major, and he sees the cost of this and the cost of war after war that's put us in a position where maybe these young soldiers aren't getting the training they need to really understand what they need here, what they need to do.
I think Claude in Myrtle Beach was absolutely on point with this was being a failure of leadership. Oddly enough, I'm going to actually be down in the Grand Strand next week for the elections. But, Claude's a sergeant major. My father is a retired two-star general, was over in the Gulf during the first Gulf War. And he would say the same thing, that with the cuts and with the change of focus in the military, the current crop of NCO leaders and as well as commissioned officers have a different focus. And this was ultimately a problem. You know, these are 22, 23, 24-year-olds. Even with the being in the 3rd Battalion, 2nd Marine Regiment, they were elite. They're elite no more. But their bosses, their officers, should have checked them on this long time ago. You know, someone was standing there with a video camera. They were talking to the video camera. Did they have any clue that this would show up on YouTube?
At their age, they know darn well what happens with YouTube. I mean, they know.
Absolutely.
They know.
Probably
you make a video,
it.
It's going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, sympathy for them being in that situation, but the cost to their honor over time in our countries. I want to come to you, David and Jack, but Rich in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Rich, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I just want to, I'll keep mine brief. I just want to say, you know, everybody keeps talking about the cost that these Marines are going to, have caused and going to incur, but whatever gains you've made, they can be upset by an incident this simple. You really haven't made much in the way of gains. I mean, I know we live in the age of the internet and the age of video, but you don't like the ugly face of war, quit sending teenagers off to fight it. I don't even know that these Marines necessarily hate the Afghans. It's just, I don't know, it's like anything else. These things happen. I've witnessed soldiers urinating in cans and bottles and handing it to kids because they're begged hours and hours and hours and days for anything.
For candy, for something. Hey, Rich, you're calling from Fort Campbell. Have you been in Afghanistan? Have you served there, Rich?
I've been in Afghanistan. I've worked with Marines. I've worked with Army. I've worked with a lot of people.
Yep.
And, I'm just saying, this is, if we can destroy all that we've accomplished with this one video, then obviously our foreign policy is flawed.
Well, that may be right. David Korn, maybe so. On the other hand, in this day and age, we all now know that there is nothing that necessarily stays private. And you do something like that and put it on video, and the odds are it becomes a global meme about what Americans are and what they stand for, whether you like that or not.
I think that's correct, Tom. And this is what shows that, you know, an endeavor like a major war overseas really is built often, unfortunately, on a very delicate foundation. If the Afghans, most importantly, and other people in the region and other people in the world, were convinced that the U.S. actions there were correct, a video like this would be seen as an outlier and wouldn't matter. But if that's not the case, then it has significance. In fact, there was a commenter when the video was put up. It was taken down, but you still can find it. Others have it up. We have it up at MotherJones.com.
Mm-hmm.
But there was when it was the original site, there was a fellow who claimed to be a veteran. You never know on the Internet.
Of course.
But he said, "Thanks, fellas. You just pissed away everything me and my boys fought for." And it shows that, yes, things are so fragile there that one video of 30 seconds of rude and terrible behavior can blow away, hundreds of billions of dollars of activity and hundreds and thousands of lives affected. So, the big picture here, the big message is, I suppose, that if you go to war, you better be able to do it right, because these things are going to happen, and you can't have everything be held hostage by the actions of a few
dumb folks.
It's hell, and we know it, and they're out there, but discipline now more important than ever. Here, Lisa writes online, she says, all right, the Marines video, we are teaching them through these wars, Lisa writes, to disrespect human life, and then act surprised when they don't. Ariane in New Haven, Connecticut. Ariane, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I was actually just going to talk about that. I find it absurd that we're talking about this act of the soldiers being dishonorable when they're already standing over people that they've killed. I mean, in itself, we have to look at ourselves and ask, do we really think that it's honorable to fight these wars? It's only dishonorable when we start disrespecting the dead. I mean, when you have these wars that you're constantly fighting, and when you're teaching people not to value human life and to simply go in and use, even when with drone strikes, we're dehumanizing war. We're making it so that a simple button is killing people, and it really doesn't matter if it's civilians or not. I think we have to ask ourselves, do we really want to be a nation that emphasizes war so much? Because it's going to, no matter when you have war, it's going to lead to these things. I mean, think of the incidents that weren't videotaped. This is just not something that I think as a nation we should accept.
Well, I take your point. On the other hand, it is war. If you're going to do that, and this, I guess, is your point, yes, then we're sending them to kill. You can't get up in arms when soldiers kill. That's what you send them for. But here's another listener online writes, urinate on dead folks and the lords of warmongering have conniptions, kill some civilians with remote drones, and no big deal, collateral damage. We highly regret the loss. Jack Beatty, I mean, you get with our young people into very tough moral terrain here really quickly.
You do, and the extreme vulnerability, as David said, we have to these incidents. My view is this. I really agree with Ariane. This is what war is. You will the means. You will the end. This is the means. This happens. I remember reading about.
Isn't that an insult to a lot of soldiers who do not urinate on corpses, Jack?
Let me put it this way. This kind of thing inevitably happens. I've been reading letters of Scottish soldiers home to the home front in World War I, and they're talking routinely about killing prisoners. Lots of them. Lots of German prisoners. Yeah. Bayoneting them.
And as our caller says, Achilles dragging Hector around the walls of Troy. I mean, that's timeless.
You can't, I'm not making any excuses for these people, but someone talked about the youth of these people. You know, there was a story from Iraq a while ago about a battle someplace and young people were looking, I think 19-year-old soldier was looking outside a window and there was a cat. And he said, sir, can I shoot that cat, sir? And the captain said, no, of course you can't shoot that cat. But, you know, he's 19 years old. The super ego controls, the internalization of the mission, all of that is secondary right then to the adrenaline charge. I am going to survive. I'm keyed to mete out violence, not to receive it. It's just fraught. These things are just fraught with atrocities like this.
David in Yamasee, South Carolina. David, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. People forget that what is right about war to begin with. One, we're fighting it because we have to fight it. People are trying to kill us. A warrior has done his job if the enemy runs at the sight of you. If he drops his weapons and says, please show mercy upon me, we've done our job. As a two-tour veteran with the Marine Corps, I can tell you that you want to strike fear into the hearts of your enemy. You want to get into their minds and say, yes, we are going to punish you. We are going to hunt you down relentlessly.
Okay, David, I got that. But does this strike fear or does this rally more people in Helmand, in this case, to join the Taliban and fight back against foreigners who are there urinating on the corpses of their countrymen?
It could do that. It could do that. One thing about that, and you can add, and it's the warrior mentality of the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
One way to go find your enemy is to have them probe you. If they're attacking you, you know where your enemy's at.
Well, but you don't want a whole country.
A whole different mindset.
Point taken, David. I appreciate your call. One more, Georgia in Amana, Iowa. Georgia, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask, who has damaged our security more, Bradley Manning with his desire for freedom of information or the four heroic Marines? And I also would like to suggest, if we're going to avoid war with Iran, we better have a write-in vote for Ron Paul. He's the only one that can save us, although it might the election might be too late for that.
Well, Georgia, you're right on the button. Ron Paul's big showing there in New Hampshire, and a lot of that support that's coming behind him is exactly to stay out of wars like this. No question about that. And, of course, David Corn, Brandley Manning this week, what a good green light for court-martial against him, which could put him in jail for life. Georgia, you know, suggesting there that she's more in his camp than on the other side. We got big decisions in front of us as a country in this coming year, David.
Well, you know, I think they're sort of a little bit of apples and oranges, though I do take her point. I mean, we do have big decisions. We have big decisions. We talked about Iran earlier. We have big, you know, the president has talked about pulling troops out of Afghanistan to get to in 2014, a point when we turn this over, you know, the security in Afghanistan almost entirely to Afghan forces. And we may, you know, looking at it, it's hard to see how that can work. If you want to sort of keep the level of security that the U.S. forces are now bringing to Afghanistan, which is not a, I guess it still is that a open question to what degree this is working. We have big, I mean, this election coming up is just foundational in that you have the Republican Party moving, I would say, very far to the right, saying, you know, we have to cut government to grow, and you have Obama saying we need government to help us figure out how to grow the economy into the rest of this very challenging century. So these are big issues that are going to come up, you know, in the next few months, and I hope we can get, you know, have a good debate about it.
Well, there's that foundation. Ron Paul would stretch it a little wider. Barack Obama, not shy with the drones. Ron Paul says, bring that military forces home. And his voice still out there as well. All that, plus we've got a lot of people writing here about Tim Tebow this week, and Haley Barber, we'll look at that on Monday. David Corn with Mother Jones, always great to have you. Thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Brian Monroe with CNNPolitics.com, regards to your general father, and thank you for being with us today, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
Jack Beatty, thanks for joining us. I'm glad you survived all the mayhem in New Hampshire.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, have a good weekend. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.